Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 169, being recorded on the 9th of March, 2017, with special guests Yohai Kiriati and Sean McKenna. I'm Sujit, and on Skype with me, I have Kale, Evan, and our special guests, Sean and Yohai. And we're really, really excited to have them on. They're we've heard them present at internal conferences at Microsoft, and they've, you know, probably got some great information to share with us, and we're going to get to that in just a minute. But before that, let's just talk about some of the recent updates in the Azure space. And Kale and Evan, I think you guys put a bunch of them in the show notes. As usual, I see the usual obligatory blockchain mention in there.
This is a big one, though. We'll give Kale credit. I mean,
go ahead. What's this thing about the Ethereum? How do you say that? I always get confused. Sorry.
Yeah, it's it's EEA. You can just call it that. That's easier. Okay. The Enterprise Ethereum Alliance. So basically, February 28th, we did a big announcement here with a lot of the big financial companies, JP Morgan, Santander, you name it, as well as some of the different trading companies, as well as technical companies in the blockchain space, Consensus, Aris, Monex. JP Morgan has built a product called Quorum that actually was part of the alliance, and we actually launched that on Azure on the 28th in a kind of a demo form, and basically made an announcement that we'll have that in like full like end node type deployment very soon, probably in the next week or so. And you know, basically it's just about establishing some kind of standards around what we're doing in this space, in the enterprise space, because everybody's doing the same thing. Pretty much everybody comes into the space and looks at the tools that's there and rips out the pieces they don't need and supplants them with other things, and everybody did the same thing. So we said, why are we doing this? Let's all just come together and try to build some standards body around this.
Wow. It's really taken off there. Yep. And I think so would you say, Kale, that Microsoft has like a leadership position in this now?
Oh, definitely. From a platform perspective, I mean, we're leading the charge there. There's really, I mean, there was a couple articles on the internet, and it was like, you know, kind of jokingly saying, and now they're too, because it's essentially, you know, IBM has a product with Hyperledger. And Microsoft's putting a lot of force behind a bunch of different platforms. Ethereum's a big one, but we are supporting them all. I mean, so UTXO type transactions, the stuff we talked about on the podcast before, we're really just there as a platform player to make all of these blockchains run well.
That's our future, right? I mean, we certainly participate in some software applications and services themselves, but we also see ourselves ultimately as a platform provider, mm-hmm. right? So. Makes sense. Now that means we're going to have more blockchain from Kale every week.
Yeah, of course.
And then, Evan, I see some couple of SQL items over here. You want to?
Yeah, so one of them is really about trying to make it easier for customers to. I mean, there's some new features right now. We've got larger storage, you know, up to 4 terabytes, and then also some, you know, additional kind of service, another that goes with the service tier, but also, and I thought this was kind of interesting, is we've changed the way the portal is kind of handling these sizes, where you can pick your DTU and you pick your storage, and that drives you to a tier, right? Rather than kind of the old model, which, and we do this in VMs, you have to pick a tier, and then that provides you with certain, you know, performance or memory or whatever, and it kind of flips it around. Right now, you probably don't care what we call the tier, you want certain features or you want certain performance levels. So I think they've done a good job at flipping it around to look at it that perspective. The other one is the Polybase row improvement, basically is to allow you to have basically larger characters, right? Character data can be big, and this allows you to now do 8,000 bytes no matter whether or not you actually had that much in there, we're going to allow you to reserve that. So.
That's cool. So I like this new portal preview of the Azure Resource Policy that just came out, and because we've always had the sort of security restrictions that you could have for users, right? What they could do in Azure, but now you could even add additional policies like saying, oh, you can only deploy something in the U.S. or something like that. So this and the actual policies now can be created right from inside the portal itself,
So
which I think.
this is basically on top of the previous existing role-based access stuff. This is another layer
Correct.
then on top of that.
Yep.
Interesting.
And so this is I think this is what they've done is they've allowed you to create those policies right in the portal itself now, which was previously not possible. And then the Azure Data Factory, so they've glad to see them add new updates almost every month. This is the February update that just came out. They've added like the Oracle driver, some connections to Azure Data Lake Store using the Service Principal authentication, zip compression, decompression support, support for extracting arrays from JSON files, and things like that. So there's just really all around enhancements, and they're going to do this on a regular cadence, as is the beauty of the cloud, is where they can push the software pretty quickly. And then what else? So Visual Studio 2017, that was a big one, right? That just got released this week, I think, earlier this week, and a lot of cool cloud stuff in there.
This is one of the, like, this is an enabling product, right? I mean, so it definitely gets tied tighter and tighter into the cloud, but it ties tighter into everything, right? Tighter into the testing, tighter into TFS, more on some of the mobile Xamarin, type development. It really has a ton of stuff in it. The thing that I like is the perf stuff. I actually need to go install it because Visual Studio 2015 is good, but man, it takes some time to start up.
It does.
I've actually been playing with Visual Studio Code, and it's kind of nice to be up and running in like 2 seconds
Yeah.
when I do something in code. So I'm really curious to see how that 2017 experience is.
Yeah, and one thing about the 17, I just wanted to call out to our listeners. If you go to the link that we'll have in the show notes, if you download it by March 14th, there's this free 60-day access to Xamarin University. So you were mentioning Xamarin there a minute ago, Evan. So there's some free stuff up there if you go kind of get this early.
Definitely.
Nice. And then the MySQL in-app feature, which became generally available. This was something that was in preview before. It was actually launched last August, so it took a while to make it generally available. But this is kind of like the, a lot of these poor Joomla and other CRM, mini CRM applications. They let you have a database right in the app itself, so you're not connecting out to a separate database. I guess what we used to call SQL Server Express, right?
Oh no, this was Jet. This was like you go back far enough of the Access database, right?
There you
You
go.
ship it out as a. But I mean, it's basically that same mindset, right? I don't have
It's
to set
running
up
in the
anything
memory
separate.
space of the application
Yeah,
itself. It's not an out-of-band connection.
exactly. And so it's so much easier to deploy and manage from that side, but it's way better than Access databases under or Jet databases underneath, IS. I think these days you can do that with Microsoft Access, but they totally had to rewrite the engine to make that work.
Well,
So,
the big advantage in this is that when you're ready to grow up into a regular MySQL, they have an import and export feature now, which lets you just take that LocalDB database and just put it into one of our managed MySQL offerings, and now you can grow as much as you want to.
cool.
Good. All right. I think that's a good wrap up of all the updates, right, guys? Did I miss anything?
Sounds good.
All right, so let's turn our mics over to our guests, Yohai and Sean. And I appreciate Yohai if you could just give us a quick intro first and then follow with Sean, and then we'll dive into some cool stuff with regard to Azure Compute. Go ahead.
Sure. So my name is Yohai Kriadi. I'm a program manager on the Azure team, specifically working on the Azure App Service. I've been working on the product for, close to 6 years now, pretty much on day one. And yeah, it's great seeing it growing. You mentioned mentioned local MySQL, MySQL in-app basically,
Yep.
which is again another feature from my team as well. So it's
Yeah.
awesome. And lately, I've been doing a lot of function Azure Function work. So it's again, it's very exciting to see all the innovation coming out.
That's cool. And Sean, can you just give a quick intro, please?
Sure. So I'm Sean McKenna. I'm a program manager in the compute team. Been in Azure for a little over 2 years now, and I worked on a number of our different sort of middleware layers. You can think of things like Service Fabric, Azure Container Service, and then some of our third-party offerings like Cloud Foundry, and do a bunch of work around types of stuff that we're going to be talking about today, which is, you know, how do we explain to customers of this based on this huge catalog of services that we have, you know, when they should be using what?
Yeah, that's actually a very, very good topic. And, you know, Sean, we were talking earlier how when we started this podcast 3.5 years ago, we thought, like, you know, in 10 or 15 episodes, we'd be done, right? We'd have nothing more to talk about. And this is now episode number 169, and we still have a long way to go.
And we're falling further behind, right?
We're falling further behind, yeah. I think we're
slow down.
No, not at all. Keep on going. We're very, very happy with the pace of innovation here. But what that also means is, you know, obviously for our customers and for our listeners specifically, it can be a very confusing task to pick the right service for what they're trying to do. And also from my side, and some, and Kale and Evan, you know, we speak to customers all the time. I'm an MCS consultant, Kale's with DX, and Evan's in support, Azure support. And you know, I guess they probably get asked, and we all get asked all the time, is like, you know, what's the best way where should I put this particular workload? You know, how do I decide where to put it? And I think that's what you kind of, I think where you guys can offer some guidance in that area. So, how does one just start such a discussion? You know, if you're approached with a question like this.
Yeah, so the reason that that Yohai and I have been working together is because you know, what we've found is that a bunch of Microsoft teams have gone out to talk to customers and sort of talk broadly, and we all end up making a pitch that sounds very similar. That, you know, you want a service that scales and is highly reliable and allows you to be productive as a developer, and obviously customers say yes, and then, you know, we've got 7 different things that match that description. So what we've been trying to do is provide people with a little bit more clarity about what are the sweet spots for the different services, because ultimately they're all going to give you some of those core capabilities. So the way that we really think about it is, if you imagine sort of a stack of offerings, we think, you know, going from the bottom of that stack, where we've got our compute primitives, so things like virtual machines and now virtual machine scale sets, those are really high control type offerings where, you know, you're getting base compute that you can deploy really whatever you want, and it's not something that's really opinionated in any way. Then on top of that, we layer some middleware type components that get a little bit more opinionated, provide a little bit more capability, but start to take some of that raw control away. And so that's where you're looking at things like Service Fabric, Azure Container Service, and again, some third-party offerings like Cloud Foundry or OpenShift. And then at the top of the stack is really where things like App Service and Functions come in, which are really geared towards developers, specifically towards developers, to iterate very quickly in a high productivity manner, but with giving up some control over that underlying infrastructure. So broadly, that's the way that we think about the spectrum of the stack, is from that really high control model to all the way up to, you know, really high productivity.
It sounds like when you talk about that, right? We've talked in the past about, you know, as you go from you know, on-premises to IaaS to PaaS to SaaS, right? You're giving up control to save cost. It sounds like what a lot of what you guys are working on is kind of taking that, the compute space of that, the IaaS PaaS compute stuff, and giving some gradations within that with these different products. Is that a fair assessment of kind of space you're playing in? You know, were you saying? Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's really depends on Well, there's a given scenario in the application you're trying to, as you describe it, move up the chain, if you would like to say it that way, from on-premise to anywhere in the cloud. And there are multiple ways to think about it. You can look at the simple lift and shift, and you barely want to, you know, find whatever you can, you know, throw this on, namely VMs, or you want to do some modernization, and with that there is a whole range of things you can go with. And as Sean mentioned, there is basically a, kind of a trade-off, right? You need to figure out what you are looking for. Do you need to have, you know, fundamentally control of the VS, the image, whatever you need to install and configure, or you're okay with basically just running the app, the application in the given model that we are providing with the higher level service, and use those and basically give away some of the control that you have with the infrastructure.
But, you know, you mentioned productivity as one of the things that you could gain as you go up the stack. I mean, so, you know, I've been a developer for a very long time, and, you know, we've always considered ourselves to be fairly productive as developers. So what additional productivity are we talking about here? Like give me an idea of just to, like, what can we gain by say going up the stack, as you say?
So I think let's look at the top of the stack. Let's look at Azure Functions, right? Serverless, basically. So this is the point where you from click to create an HTTP endpoint function, to the fact that you have an endpoint working, publicly available, and you can protect it if you want to, takes about 30 seconds. There is no framework to learn, there is no infrastructure to understand, and you have an endpoint. And you can slowly build, obviously, on top of it, more APIs and start working with backends and do asynchronous patterns and so forth. And you have literally zero investment in anything that you need to build or maintain or whatever you want to call it. And it's a fully managed platform, it scales and all of this goodness, right? If you go to AppService, then basically it's similar in nature of the infrastructure. It's, again, it's a fully managed and scale and all that, but you need to be able to deploy like an app, like, you know, like an MVC API or an .NET Core, or, you know, if you want to run on, you know, WordPress, we have support for PHP and Java and Node and so forth. But you need to have that app. You need to understand this web app or API app that there is a construct there. You need to build it and deploy it. And we provide all the automation around it, obviously, like Git deploy and monitoring and scale. Again, fully managed for you, so you don't need to touch anything of the OS, but those things needs to happen. And again, if you go, you know, you're moving on and you down the stack this time, you're going to Service Fabric, then again, you get this great platform that you need to buy into in terms of using it and offer amazing services that provide you ability to create those microservices and you know, deploy them separately and independently and be able to manage all the node, and you have persistency across the node. But you need to, again, have that model built in and buy into it. Plus, there is some parts of the infrastructure that are still exposed through those layers that you need to manage. And again, if you go downstream again, one more click to basically running on VM scale set, then yes, you can deploy and do whatever you want, and there's a way to automate all of that, but you need to have this operational management that you need to handle. So you need to operate and manage your infrastructure, which is one thing, and on top of that, you need to do your development. So the productivity is kind of on that scale. Like, it's like, hey, either you do purely app development versus having to do both app development, DevOps, plus operational side.
Got it.
Yeah,
I
think one thing to add there is basically, you know, as Yohai was alluding to, with all of those layers, obviously there's tons of tools that you can put in place to automate your workflow and set up your CI/CD pipeline, you know, whether you're targeting bare VMs all the way up to app service, right, or functions. It's, in some cases, it's a question of how quickly can I get to that level of productivity? Because if I need to, you know, understand how I'm going to build that pipeline and how I'm going to do deployment and management of that infrastructure, that takes some time to understand and then to set up. Whereas, obviously, as you go higher in the stack, you can get to, as Yohai was saying, a public endpoint available in a matter of 30 seconds. So in some cases, it's just how quickly can I spin something up, even for doing things like prototyping.
Right. So it sounds like there's different personas that are involved with making this decision, right? There is the developer persona, and then there is the, I guess, the IT person persona, maybe the network person. It looks like there's a lot of key players that have to come together to decide which of these offerings should be adopted for a particular workload, because they each offer more or less flexibility in these areas, right? Mm-hmm. And so how does what are some of the decisions, or what are some of the questions that we should be asking, or our listeners should be asking themselves, as they go through this process? Like, what are some of the high level questions that they can kind of walk them through this process of figuring out which of these various offerings they should use for a particular workload?
Yeah, so there's a couple of top level questions that will send you down a particular path. The first one is really, what level of control do you need over the compute infrastructure that you're running on? So you mentioned sort of the different personas between the IT pro and the developer. A lot of what we see particularly with enterprise customers that are coming from an on-prem environment, particularly if they're in industries that have specific regulations, they will have a series of requirements that they need to put in place on the compute infrastructure that they're running on that are not necessarily things that we are going to provide as part of our sort of default VM deployment that underlie something like App Service, right? So if you need to install very specific binaries, either your own custom binaries or things like specific antivirus software, that kind of stuff,
right?
Then you obviously need to be working at a layer where you are going to have that level of control over the infrastructure. So you're either targeting bare VMs, VMSS, or one of the layers that allows you to control those VMs. So something like Service Fabric or Container Service. The other pivot, and this is particularly interesting in that kind of middle tier where we're looking at things like Service Fabric and Azure Container Service, is around operating system choice. So if you're targeting Windows and you want to build build applications and use containers and build microservices in a highly available way, that lines up really well with what we've done with Service Fabric. It's very much targeted at least today, a Windows.NET Visual Studio kind of Microsoft oriented developer, and that's it's been a huge success with that class of customer. Then you've got different class of customer that's working in the Linux kind of OSS world and is building containers and wants to deploy them onto Azure infrastructure. That's where we would direct people towards the Azure Container Service, for example, where they can deploy some of those popular open source container orchestrators like Kubernetes or DCOS or Swarm. So that ends up being kind of a dividing point. And obviously, both of those platforms are in the process of adding support for the other operating system. And so we get into these conversations of, well, Service Fabric's adding support for Linux or Kubernetes is adding support for Windows. And that's true. And that's really in the near term going to be focused on enabling people that need to run both to be able to target a common platform. But really, wherever your center of gravity is on your operating system target is going to dictate, at least for the foreseeable future, what the better option is for you.
So that leads to the question then, right? It almost sounds like I've got too many options, sort of. So other than, unless I kind of end up in a world like you were just talking about where, hey, I'm using Windows, so that drives me maybe to Service Fabric, or I'm using Linux, so it drives me to, Kubernetes. Like, of all these things that you guys have talked about, if I'm not using any of them today, am I going to go wrong picking one over the other? Or, am I going to end up somewhere that I'm going to regret later?
So there's certainly abundance of choice, and you definitely need to be aware of where you're getting into in terms of the fine print of all of the options that you have. I think it's, again, it's and I will just go back to kind of the same answer we gave before. If you are looking to build something, move it, remove existing stuff, extend existing application, or create a brand new applications or service, basically look at the highest level of abstraction you can get, if possible for you. So if you don't need to manage anything, you don't care for the OS, you don't need those special things that Sean mentioned in terms of the OS configuration or special image, DLL or whatever you need to deploy, or whatever any idea installment or customization for the OS, then start at functions, start at app service if you like, and if it fits your need, right? Then slowly walk, then basically go down the stack and figure out what works for you. Any of those choices will have pros and cons. Any of those has caveats. Basically, if you go, you know, down the stack, you need to manage everything, you own it, you need to control the patches and literally of the OS, you need to deploy. Even if you're running containers, you still need to build this. Has a certain condition to that. If you go around multiple VMs, you have a certain topology you need to manage. That's on you. If you go up service fabric again, you need to have some infrastructure understanding as well as some of the modeling itself that needs to happen and so forth. So every layer and app services basically, yes, any app you would throw it at work, but they still have its own limitation in terms of the custom OS deployment and be able to understand how a system works if you do need to do some sort of, you know, high-end application.
But the one thing that, like, you've not mentioned, and I think it sounds like this is maybe, if I was somebody that, you know, had on stuff on premises today, this is what I should be looking at, is none of those options that you talked about, right, wherever I end up in the stack, require me to manage the hardware, right? Which is, if I stay in the on-premises world, yep, I have to manage that plus all of the other stuff you talked about.
Yeah, for sure. And that's, I think, to your previous question about, is there a place where I can kind of get go down a dead end path or get stuck? The way that we really think about it is, if you're coming from an on-prem environment where you're managing your own infrastructure, and when something goes wrong, you've got somebody running into the data center to, you know, swap out a hard drive or replace a whole rack, then any of these options is going to be such a massive transformation in your productivity that you shouldn't, you know, dwell on the really fine-grained details, right? Like, we, part of the reason that we're doing this work to try to help people understand which service they should choose is really to overcome the analysis paralysis problem, where people see all of these options, they get worried about exactly what you're talking about, which is, oh, if I make the wrong choice, am I going to regret it in 12 to 18 months? And really help people get beyond that and say, you know, if one of these services looks like it's the right fit for you, don't get too caught up in trying to make sure that it's the exact right thing versus just getting started and starting to accrue some of those productivity gains.
Would it also be like a consideration? I'm curious your feedback on this about, so if someone comes and says, hey, I got this application that's been running on-prem for X amount of years and I want to take it to the cloud, and the obvious thing is maybe there's some tight coupling in the software or something like that that requires me to do some fiddling with the OS or something. So I'm right away I'm thinking IaaS because I need maximum control so I can control this. But the downside of that, another downside would be cost, right? So if he said, well, you know, we have time, let's say, there's a bunch of factors feeding into this, and maybe saying, hey, we could actually put this on Service Fabric or use one of these higher up or up the stack things to be able to maybe gain some cost benefit and make that investment. But trying to understand that, I think it seems like another kind of pivot on this to figure out which place you should ultimately land, you know?
Yeah, I think it comes down to how much of a transformation you want to make at the time that you're moving to the cloud, right? So we see a lot of customers that are just, I literally just want to shut down my data center, or I'm going to stop paying the lease on my data center and get to the cloud, and I want to be as much of a one-to-one mapping as what I have today, and then we'll talk about how I modernize my app. And then there's other customers who are thinking, no, this is my opportunity to really think about how I break this up into a more modular architecture, and that's where they really then look at the full spectrum of solutions and start to think about, you know, moving to either a serverless model or a microservices model, maybe containerizing their application. So it really kind of depends on what your priorities are as part of that transformation.
Yeah, your story is absolutely right. I can think of at least one big customer I worked with where they were using Azure Site Recovery to literally stream their VMs, their on-premises, you know, VMs, physical and virtual, to Azure because they were, at the end of the month, they were turning off their data center.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. They didn't want to change anything. They just wanted to move it, but they wanted to do it in a seamless, but they just wanted to get rid of that on-premises hardware.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the type of customer that's not going to be changing to functions.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
So the other thing that I see a lot of customers get lost in are all these buzzwords, right? They throw around things like IaaS, PaaS, microservices, containers. These things like are all over the place, right? And I wonder, like, should customers really be thinking about these things, or should they be thinking about, like, as you said, you know, how much abstraction do I want in my application? Like, should they be unless thinking too much about microservices, for example, or whether I should be using containers?
It goes back to what they're trying to do. If this, you know, example that Evan mentioned, like, hey, you get 2 weeks to move everything. Basically, you're just looking a place to rehost whatever you got, right?
Right.
And if you have a little time, you're looking to do some refactoring, which could be translated into how you package your application, where containers is a super great example, you know, offering or really comfortable, you know, good fit to be able to just prepackage your application existing stuff, right? You're building basically another container image and you can work it out. Then you look to, hey, I'm looking to do some modernization for my application. This is the opportunity, as Sean mentioned, you know, break a little bit, take application into some smaller block, basically revise your application and see how you can fit a little bit more modern architecture. And you can then choose exactly some of the little bit of the higher stack backup service, depends again what you're looking for. You can completely rebuild the thing, right, which is a complete rewrite. And at this point, again, obviously modern architecture built and born into the cloud. And you can, again, start from the higher stack and see how you can work yourself down. Or we also see a lot of customers basically just replacing their application completely, like going in a SaaS solution or something like that, and completely forfeiting their, you know, that core and set of application from on-prem. So it depends on a variety of, you know, budget, time, you know, desire to actually do some of those changes.
What about from a tooling perspective? I know in the past we had some kind of site. So if somebody says, I think I can put this in, like, let's say an app service, like a web app, I think it'll run fine there, but I'm not 100% sure. I know there was, at one point we had, I think it was back when it was called Azure Websites, we had some tooling. Is that stuff still around? Or is there other tools that people could be looking to leverage to do that?
So moveme2thecloud.net. Or migrate me to the cloud. I think either one of those works will get you to the right place. That's the same tool is still there. We actually released a new version of it, and we are working on a newer version that will actually help migrate Linux workloads as well. And basically, just check your on-prem Windows servers. Check for all the web applications that are running there. And figuring out if you actually can migrate in terms of all the dependencies, if you have any specific IP filter or modules or any of the special thing that you need to work with, and give you a report whether it's going to work or not, and suggest of how you can repackage and redeploy the app itself.
Okay. This is great. This is very good. Now, let me ask you, I'm sure our listeners are also wondering, all these decisions, like this decision tree that you just described, are we planning to kind of, you know, document it or put maybe some guidance on the on our Azure website at some point, just so that, you know, our listeners can do this themselves?
We are.
Hey, Sean, that's a good question, Sean.
Oops, sorry, didn't mean to put you on the spot there.
No, that's okay. It's as soon as we finish our the work that we've started, we probably should do it at some point.
Yeah, so we've got some rough guidance that we've written up that we just need to polish, and then our intention is to put that out as part of our public documentation so that people can sort of step through some of these decisions.
All right, this has been great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, guys, for coming on.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle, @AzurePodcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.